Hello and welcome to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Dr. Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson, and produced in the studios of WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. I'm Jeff White. This is edition NWS 817 for release on Sunday, October 20th, 2024. On the program today, an offshore radio station against Hitler, Hurricane Milton's effects on WRMI, and part two of our report on the HFCC B24 conference in Uzbekistan. The radio station of the German Freedom Party was the first European offshore radio station, and the only one which primarily targeted a German audience. Remarkably, it served a political purpose, resistance against the Nazi regime. It was programmed by German journalists living in exile, supported by Dutch, British, and French collaborators in their courageous, but unfortunately short-lived, project in 1938. Here's Ray Robinson at the Voice of Hope Studios in Los Angeles to tell us more.
Thanks, Jeff. Well, I thought I knew quite a lot about European offshore radio, but I'd never heard of this one before some new research was published by Dr. Martin van der Ven in Germany in July. We're very grateful to him for this fascinating historical reportage. This is the story of the Sender der Deutschen Freiheitspartei, or the Station of the German Freedom Party, which operated from the radio ship Faithful Friend on shortwave. In January 1938, Adolf Hitler had been in power in Germany for 5 years, and the potential for another all-out war was looming. A 50-year-old journalist and Centre Party politician, Dr. Karl Spieker, had been living in exile for those 5 years. He'd been the ministerial director and press secretary of the Reich government from 1922 to 1925, and he'd also led a special department to combat National Socialism under Heinrich Brüning's government in 1930 and 31. But after the Nazis took power in January 1933, Spieker was dismissed from his state position for, quote, political unreliability, unquote. He fled abroad, first to France, then England, and later to the USA and Canada. Under the pseudonym Miles Ecclesi, he published a pamphlet called Hitler Against Christ in 1936. Then, together with another exile, Otto Klepper, he founded the German Freedom Party, or the DFP. The aim of the organisation was to unite various political and religious viewpoints into a centrist People's Front Without Communists. They opposed the Hitler dictatorship from abroad with as much anonymity as possible, while still maintaining contacts with the Wehrmacht, churches, economists and student groups in Germany. On February 17, 1937, a Paris daily newspaper published a first leaflet signed by the Reich leadership of the German Freedom Party, demanding a referendum on whether Germany should continue to participate in the Spanish Civil War. Klepper and Spieker then distributed subsequent German Freedom letters through secret channels from the end of March 1937, targeting mainly the foreign press correspondents accredited in Berlin. But besides his publishing activities, Karl Spieker discovered radio as a medium for his political activities and resistance against the Nazi regime. From the second half of February 1938, he used the ship Faithful Friend, registered in the English port of Lowestoft, Suffolk, to broadcast radio programmes on shortwave against the Nazi regime. The ship, built in 1913 by the shipping company John Chambers and Company Limited in Lowestoft, was a steam-powered fishing trawler that had belonged to Gilbert and Company Limited in Lowestoft, and which used the call sign LT-33. On February 18, 1938, the ship was sold to Wessex Drifters Limited, a front company founded by the SIS, the British Secret Intelligence Service, now known as MI6. The trawler cruised under the British flag in the international waters of the North Sea and the English Channel, mostly along the northern coast of France between Dieppe and Cherbourg, but also later off the Dutch coast. While serving as a radio station, 8 men were on board, the captain, a cook, 4 sailors and stokers, all English fishermen, a German journalist who also acted as the radio man, and a Dutch radio technician. Spieker's radio station, Station of the German Freedom Party, was supported by two experts from VARA in Hilversum who alternated on board. They used a shortwave transmitter with an output power of just less than 5 kilowatts, which had apparently been prepared in utmost secrecy by British technicians. Even the British government was not officially informed. The frequency used was 7842 kilohertz, or 38.25 meters, but a later report also mentions 10070 kHz. There may have been some confusion between the station of the German Freedom Party and another station called the German Freedom Station, which broadcast its programs from Spain on 10070 kHz, or 29.8 meters shortwave, at the same time. But a situation report by the Gestapo in Karlsruhe does note at the end of April 1938 that the Freedom Station was heard several times during the month on both 29.8 and 38.25 meters, the wavelengths of the two similarly named stations. The German radio men on board the broadcast ship Faithful Friend were two social democrats, initially Jakob Altmaier and shortly thereafter Ernst Langendorf. The station is believed to have started broadcasting in February 1938. The exact date isn't known, but it was probably shortly after the sale of the ship to Wessex Drifters Limited on the 18th of that month. Available sources suggest that Karl Spieker, as the initiator and organisational and editorial head of the radio station, was not himself on board the broadcasting ship. He evidently wrote his texts in Paris, from where they were sent to a cover address in the port where the Faithful Friend docked. At times, the broadcast ship Faithful Friend was reportedly shadowed by a French warship to prevent it entering French territorial waters while broadcasting. The French authorities were apparently well informed about the true mission of the ship, but they left the Faithful Friend undisturbed during its stays in the harbour. The station announcement, in German of course, was, "This is the radio station of the German Freedom Party." The broadcasts were intended to be heard daily, normally from 7.30 to 8pm and from 10 to 10.30pm. If weather conditions permitted, the programmes were repeated several times per night. In case of a storm, the ship occasionally couldn't leave the harbour, so broadcasts had to be cancelled. They read news from around the world, but mainly from Germany. This was followed by political commentary and an international press review, as well as calls to resist the Hitler regime. Altmaier and Langendorf provided detailed reports in their broadcasts about the Condor Legion, through which the German Reich government was involved in the Spanish Civil War. They referred to the January 13, 1935 Saar referendum as a rigged referendum, and according to another Gestapo situation report in Karlsruhe, the radio station called for a no vote in the referendum on the Anschluss of Austria to the German Reich, planned for March 13, 1938. The Anschluss was the idea of the unification of Austria with Germany, which actually had strong support in both countries at the time. In an interview in April 1976 on German radio, Ernst Langendorf remembered the events of 1938. He said, "The first editor and radio speaker on board was Jakob Altmaier, but after just a few days he quit, as the working and living conditions on this dirty and primitive coal-powered ship were simply too much for him during the winter storms. I reached Dieppe in mid-February. The stormy sea had forced the entire fishing fleet into the harbour. Nevertheless, we set out to sea the next afternoon. After just a few hours, I was drenched to the skin due to the high waves, and I was so seasick that I was quite incapacitated. Ready to die, I sought out my small cabin." The captain eventually returned to the harbour. During the night, the storm subsided, and the next afternoon the sea was fairly calm, so we made a new attempt, and this time everything worked. The Dutch technician from Radio Hilversum got the broadcast equipment ready, with the electricity coming from a gasoline-powered generator. We broadcast on 38.25 meters shortwave. At 7.30pm, I sat in front of the microphone and read the station announcement. "This is the radio station of the German Freedom Party." Then followed news, an international press review, a commentary, and various informative program segments. The broadcasts lasted 30 minutes each and were regularly punctuated by the station identification, including the wavelength and broadcast times. This continued for about 2 months. Whenever we were in harbour, I stocked up on newspapers and magazines. I'd also take the opportunity to call Dr. Spieker in Paris, who provided me with information, advice and instructions. The day before the planned Austrian referendum in March 1938, the German army crossed the border into Austria unopposed. You can imagine how busy I was in my radio broadcasts, passing on the reaction to Germany's actions from the international press as far as I could get hold of it. We had no news editorial staff. I was the only news editor on the ship. During the daytime, I always sat at the radio receiver taking notes on reports from the English, French, Swiss and German broadcasts. I then made my news broadcasts from these notes and was on the microphone twice every evening for half an hour each, the first one being a longer news broadcast. I also had newspapers, magazines and books with me, which gave me ideas for commentaries, which I wrote and read out myself. How well the German Freedom Party transmitter was received in Germany is very hard to determine. I only know for sure that it was monitored by the Gestapo, because in a military history archive in Freiburg, there are reports of an intercepted broadcast from this transmitter, which is named in full in those reports. Dr. Spieker had connections in Scandinavia, and he'd asked his friends there to tune in when the station was broadcasting. They sent him reports on the reception quality, but of course that says nothing about the actual listenership in Germany, which was probably very small. At the end of 1937, Germany had about 68 million inhabitants. Of these, only 9 million people were registered as licensed radio listeners, but each receiving device undoubtedly served multiple listeners, especially in families. By 1938, the German radio industry had produced about 3.4 million people's receivers, which the Nazis used as an inexpensive propaganda instrument to influence the masses. This was a medium wave only receiver, with the shortwave band deliberately omitted by design to try to prevent reception of degenerate broadcasts from abroad. However, in the 1930s, the German language broadcasts of the BBC could also be heard on medium wave and thus on the people's receivers. Regularly in those German language broadcasts, the BBC gave instructions on how to convert a people's receiver into a world receiver by adding a shortwave converter. The last broadcasts from the Faithful Friend probably took place after about 2 months on the night of April the 11th to the 12th, 1938. Again, Ernst Langendorf recalls, "Everything went well until early April. On land I called Dr. Spieker, who instructed us to stay in the harbour. When he finally arrived, he explained that he expected difficulties for our broadcasts due to changes in Paris. His contact at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs at Quai d'Orsay had advised him to get out of French national waters until the situation became clearer. After some discussions, we eventually followed the advice of the Dutch technician. Accordingly, we were to head for the port of IJmuiden. The crew in Cherbourg Harbour followed Karl Spieker's recommendation and sailed to IJmuiden in the Netherlands on April the 12th. When they docked, the boat was thoroughly inspected, first by customs officers and then by a group of harbour police officers. The authorities sealed the transmitter and checked the crew members' papers and passports. Langendorf had to accompany them to the station, where there was a silent confrontation with a German officer wearing a Nazi badge on his lapel. Apparently, the German embassy had been informed in advance. But the following day, April the 13th, after deciding that the transmitter was probably just a normal ship-to-shore radio, the ship received permission to leave the harbour again, which happened on April the 14th, allegedly with the destination of Dunkirk. The transmitter was eventually stored in a warehouse in Boulogne, and the ship returned to England. Langendorf returned to Paris on Easter Saturday, April the 16th, and learned that Karl Spieker had meanwhile hired a comfortable motor yacht, which was also to be equipped in Boulogne. However, during a test run, the yacht caught fire after some gasoline was spilled in the galley. The boat was then a total wreck. So, frustrated at that point, Spieker gave up his courageous radio ship project. Speaker, of course, in 1938 had to cover the costs for food and wages for the Faithful Friend's crew, finance the fuel, both coal for the ship's engine and gasoline for the generator, and procure the broadcasting equipment. However, it's since transpired that he had numerous contacts with British underground organisations. Jakob Altmaier and Karl Spieker are both listed in the directory of Officers, Agents and Main Contacts of Section D of the Secret Intelligence Service, SIS, alias MI6. Founded in April 1938, just as the broadcasts from Faithful Friend were ending, the SIS received formal permission to commence activities in March 1939 and eventually formed the core of the Special Operations Executive, the SOE. But it seems highly likely the whole Faithful Friend project was covertly funded through British intelligence in London. So what happened to the ship? The Faithful Friend is believed to have been scrapped at the end of 1939. Back to you, Jeff.
Thanks, Ray. Next week, Ray will be taking a look at the history of the V call signs in Newfoundland. 2 weeks ago, we had a report on radio's role in the aftermath of Hurricane Helene, which came ashore in North Florida and continued into the southeastern United States. Unfortunately, another strong Category 4 hurricane hit Florida on October 9th, with the eye striking around the city of Sarasota on the Gulf Coast of Florida, and then continuing all the way east across the state. The center crossed slightly north of the WRMI transmitter site in Okeechobee, spawning over 100 tornadoes in its path. The tornadoes did not hit WRMI, but the high winds from the hurricane did do extensive damage to the station's transmission lines that carry the signal from the transmitters to the antennas. Electrical power was out on Wednesday afternoon, and it wasn't restored until 21 hours later. So all of WRMI's transmitters were off the air on the night of Wednesday, October 9th. After power was restored on October 10th, the WRMI engineers assessed the damage in the antenna field. And amazingly, they were able to repair most of the transmission lines very quickly. So most of WRMI's frequencies were back on the air Thursday night. Some additional frequencies returned on Friday. As we record this edition of WaveScan, there are still three WRMI frequencies that are off the air, but it's hoped they will be restored very shortly. Now, let's continue our report about the High Frequency Coordination Conference, which took place in Tashkent, Uzbekistan at the end of August. Along with Red Telecom, the Uzbek Ministry of Digital Technologies, and the government's broadcasting authority, co-sponsored the conference. Representatives from these organizations opened the meeting on Monday, August 26th, followed by speeches from the HFCC chairman, yours truly, and the representative from the Arab States Broadcasting Union, Mohsen Ghomam. The Asia-Pacific Broadcasting Union was also represented. Here's an edited recording of the opening plenary in Tashkent. The first voice you'll hear is that of Jérôme Irigoyen of Télédiffusion de France. He's HFCC's vice chairman.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tashkent, the capital of Uzbekistan, the largest city, metropolitan Central Asia, and a key cultural, economic, and political hub in the region. With a story spanning of two millennia, Tashkent has a rich history marked by Persian, Turkish, and Russian influence. It combines modern architecture with historical monuments, a blend of tradition and modernity. It is the first time that HFCC conference takes place here in Uzbekistan. I hope you enjoy your staying in this place. I'm happy to introduce this B24 conference. First, thanks to Daniel Robinson, Managing Director of Red Telecom, hosting this conference. Daniel, please.
Good morning, everyone. Jérôme took all my words, so I don't have to say everything, repeat, but welcome to Tashkent. We are very happy to welcome all the delegates from all over the world. It's, as Jérôme said, this is the first time that this conference is being held in Central Asia. I think it's a wonderful opportunity to diversify locations that the HFCC holds the conference, and for the delegates to see this region, which has a lot to offer. It's beautiful. The people are wonderful. Enjoy your stay here. I'd like to thank various organizations that assisted us, the hotel, of course, my own staff, the Ministry of Digital Technologies, and CRRT, our partner here. As such, I'd like to welcome Mr. Usmanov from the Ministry of Digital Technologies, who will say a few words of welcome to the delegates, and then we'll have one other speaker, a short welcome. Please, Mr. Usmanov. Russian, English.
Okay. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
English.
We are very glad to see you in our capital city in Tashkent. Welcome to Uzbekistan. I hope you will enjoy staying in Tashkent very well. Let me continue in Russian. Мы очень рады приветствовать наших уважаемых гостей нашей столицы.
We're very happy to welcome our honored guest to our capital city.
Мы надеемся, что участники наилучшим образом воспользуются предоставленными возможностями пообщаться на рамках международной конференции по координации коротковолновых частот.
We hope that you use the delegates use this opportunity to do your work here and successfully.
Узбекистан является одним из не очень многочисленных стран, которые имеют возможность вещать на коротких волнах на больших мощностях.
Узбекистан is one of few countries that is still able to or still broadcasting on shortwave.
In high power.
Oh, thank you.
И мы до сих пор стараемся сохранить всю эту техническую инфраструктуру для радиовещания на коротких волнах.
And we're trying to maintain the infrastructure to continue to broadcast on shortwave.
Потому что мы уверены, что коротковолновое вещание имеет еще свое будущее.
Because we're sure that shortwave still has a future.
У нас есть большая радиостанция с мощными антенными системами. Мы ведем работы по поэтапной модернизации передатчиков.
Our station has various antennas. We're continuing to modernize the station and work on that.
Сохранение всей этой инфраструктуры — это довольно непростая задача, которой занимается наш предприятие, Центр радиосвязи, радиовещания, телевидения.
Our organization, CRRT, continues to work on maintaining the infrastructure and modernizing it.
И мы рады, что имеем честь предоставлять вам услуги по распространению радиосигналов на коротких волнах.
And we're happy to continue to allow the possibility of broadcasting on shortwave from Uzbekistan.
Спасибо.
Thank you very much. Now I'd like to invite Mr. Mahmoud Tursunov, to say a few words from CRRT, which deals with the technical issues in Uzbekistan broadcasting.
Здравствуйте, уважаемые дамы и господа.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
В Узбекистане. Ну, как бы это давно уже как бы это традиция. Мы вот наш партнер Ritelecom рассказывает, как-то это происходит, все такое. Как бы каждый год имеется вот это общение, как бы.
We have a tradition again. This is that with our partner Ritelecom. For the to participate in the HFCC for the registration of frequencies.
Ну, как бы сказать, наше руководство сегодня должно было присутствовать, но так у нас как бы получается много мероприятий еще, так бы получилось, что поехали там с Самарканды.
Right. The deputy minister from the ministry was supposed to join us, but because due to events, he was not able to do so.
Рады вас еще видеть в нашем, как бы, как нас сейчас Сиражиддин Усманов рассказал, есть радиостанция, которая на коротковолновом вещании занимается уже с 1957 года.
Yeah, as Mr. Usmanov indicated, our station here has been working since 1957, broadcasting shortwave.
Ну, это является часть нашей, как бы сказать, деятельности, основной нашей деятельности, вещание радио, телевидение, эфирное вещание, цифровое телевидение.
Mm-hmm. This is just a part of our work that we do in Uzbekistan. Besides radio, we also do terrestrial TV broadcasting.
С удовольствием, как бы, пригласил вас, как бы, посетить наш, как бы, скажем, но это, как бы, это для нас музей, считается. Так что на радиостанцию посмотреть, как бы, как это все у нас устроено.
And if, we'll see how, if we could be able to arrange maybe a trip to the station to have a look at.
Спасибо.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you very much, Daniel, and thank you very much, everybody.
You were just listening there to the opening plenary session of the HFCC B24 conference in Tashkent, Uzbekistan. We'll continue our reporting from Tashkent in the coming weeks here on Wavescan. Folk music from Uzbekistan ends Wavescan today. Thanks for listening to Wavescan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. Next week, the V call signs of Newfoundland and our Newfoundland radio adventure. Wavescan is heard weekly on KSDA in Guam, AWR relays in various locations, WRMI in Florida, WWCR in Tennessee, Voice of Hope Africa in Zambia, and IRRS Italy. Send reception reports directly to the station you're listening to. Reports for KSDA and other AWR sites should go to qsl@awr.org. Other correspondence, not reception reports, can be sent to wavescan@yahoo.com. I'm Jeff White at WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. Till next week, good listening, everyone.